February, Week 3, Monday, 1, President's Day. Since 1968, President's Day is celebrated on the third Monday in February. President's Day is a day set aside to honor all of the U.S. presidents. We often think of two great presidents, George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, when we celebrate this holiday, as it falls by design between their birthdays. But more and more of us look at this day as a tribute to each and every person who has ever served in the office as President of the United States of America. It is a national holiday, although most businesses and industry do not recognize it as a paid holiday. The original version of the holiday was in commemoration of George Washington's birthday in 1796, the last full year of his presidency. Washington, according to the calendar that had been used since at least the mid-18th century, was born on February 22, 1732. According to the old-style calendar in use back then, however, he was born on February 11th. At least in 1796, many Americans celebrated his birthday on the 22nd, while others marked the occasion on the 11th instead. By the early 19th century, Washington's birthday had taken firm root in the American experience as a bona fide national holiday. Its traditions included birthnight balls in various regions, speeches and receptions given by prominent public figures, and a lot of revelry in taverns throughout the land. Then along came Abraham Lincoln, another revered president and fellow February baby, born on the 12th of the month. The first formal observance of his birthday took place in 1865, the year after his assassination, when both houses of Congress gathered for a memorial address. While Lincoln's birthday did not become a federal holiday like George Washington's, it did become a legal holiday in several states. In 1968, legislation was enacted that affected several federal holidays. One of these was Washington's birthday, the observation of which was shifted to the third Monday in February each year, whether or not it fell on the 22nd. This act, which took effect in 1971, was designed to simplify the yearly calendar of holidays and give federal employees some standard 3-day weekends in the process. Apparently, while the holiday in February is still officially known as Washington's birthday, at least according to the Office of Personnel Management, it has become popularly, and perhaps in some cases at the state level, legally, known as President's Day. This has made the third Monday in February a day for honoring both Washington and Lincoln, as well as all the other men who have served as president.
Tuesday, 2. The American Character. Reading. Most Americans have great vigor and enthusiasm. They prefer to discipline themselves rather than be disciplined by others. They pride themselves on their independence, their right to make up their own minds. They are prepared to take the initiative even when there is a risk in doing so. They have courage and do not give in easily. They will take any sort of job anywhere rather than be unemployed. The average American changes his or her job 9 or 10 times during his or her working life. Americans have a warmth and friendliness which is less superficial than many foreigners think. They are considered sentimental. When on ceremonial occasions they see a flag or attend parades celebrating America's glorious past, tears may come to their eyes. Reunions with family and friends tend to be emotional too. They like to dress correctly, even if correctly means flamboyantly. They love to boast, though often with tongue-in-cheek. They can laugh at themselves and their country, and they can be very self-critical, while remaining always intensely patriotic. They have a wide knowledge of everyday things and a keen interest in their particular city and state. Foreigners sometimes complain, however, that they have little interest in or knowledge of outside world. The Americans have a passion for grandeur. Their skyscrapers, bridges, and dams often have a splendor which matches in beauty and scale the country's natural wonders. Is the sole aim of most Americans to make money and possess luxuries which could be called excessive? The majority of Americans would certainly deny this, though most feel proud to amass wealth and possessions through hard work. In the USA, about 90% of the population is well enough off to expect a brighter future. The USA still has one of the highest standards of living in the world, although, at the present time, 10% are below what the government considers to be the poverty line. While these underprivileged people receive help from the government, they have no high hopes for their future. It is from this underclass, and those who take advantage of it, that most of the violence springs the violence which is one of the least pleasant aspects of American society. Americans are beginning to realize that this terrible problem of poverty is their problem and not just the government's. It has been said that the individual American is generous, but that the American nation is hard. The USA is reputed to be a classless society. There is certainly not much social snobbery or job snobbery. The manual worker is usually quite at ease in any company. This is partly explained by the fact that people of all income groups go together to the same schools. Americans are far more race-conscious than they are class-conscious.
Wednesday, 3. If I rest, I rust. Reading. The heights by great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight, but they, while their companions slept, were toiling upward in the night. The significant inscription found on an old key, "If I rest, I rust," would be an excellent motto for those who are afflicted with the slightest taint of idleness. Even the industrious might adopt it with advantage to serve as a reminder that, if one allows his faculties to rest, like the iron in the unused key, they will soon show signs of rust, and ultimately cannot do the work required of them. Those who would attain the heights by great men reached and kept must keep their faculties burnished by constant use, so that they will unlock the doors of knowledge, the gates that guard the entrances to the professions, to science, art, literature, agriculture, every department of human endeavor. Industry keeps bright the key that opens the treasury of achievement. If Hugh Miller, after toiling all day in a quarry, had devoted his evenings to rest and recreation, he would never have become a famous geologist. The celebrated mathematician Edmund Stone would never have published a mathematical dictionary, never have found the key to the science of mathematics, if he had given his spare moments, snatched from the duties of a gardener, to idleness. Had the little Scotch lad Ferguson allowed the busy brain to go to sleep while he tended sheep on the hillside, instead of calculating the position of the stars by the help of a string of beads, he would never have become a famous astronomer. Labor vanquishes all, not in constant, spasmodic, or ill-directed labor, but faithful, unremitting, daily effort toward a well-directed purpose. Just as truly as eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, so is eternal industry the price of noble and enduring success. Seize, then, the minutes as they pass. The woof of life is thought. Warm up the colors, let them glow, with fire of fancy fraught.
Thursday, 3. Working in the Garden. Reading. A prisoner in jail received a letter from his wife. I have decided to plant some lettuce in the back garden. When is the best time to plant them? The prisoner, knowing that the prison guards read all the mail, replied in a letter, Dear wife, whatever you do, do not touch the back garden. That is where I hid all the gold. A week or so later, he received another letter from his wife. You wouldn't believe what happened. Some men came with shovels to the house and dug up the whole back garden. The prisoner wrote another letter. Dear wife, now is the best time to plant the lettuce.
Friday, 4. The Post Office. Reading. There was a man who worked for the post office, whose job it was to process all the mail that had illegible addresses. One day, a letter came to his desk, addressed in a shaky handwriting to God. He thought he should open it to see what it was about. So he opened it and read, Dear God, I am an 83-year-old widow, living on a very small pension. Yesterday, someone stole my purse. In it, there was $100, which was all the money I had until my next pension check. Next Sunday is Christmas, and I had invited two of my friends over for dinner. Without that money, I have nothing to buy food with. I have no family to turn to, and you are my only hope. Can you please help me? Sincerely, Edna. The postal worker was touched. He showed the letter to all of the other workers. Each of them dug into his or her wallet and came up with a few dollars. By the time he made the rounds, he had collected $96, which they put into an envelope and sent to the woman. The rest of that day, all of the workers felt a warm glow for the kind thing they had done. Christmas came and went. A few days later, another letter came from the old lady, again addressed to God. All of the other workers gathered around while the letter was opened. It read, Dear God, how can I ever thank you enough for what you did for me? Because of your gift of love, I was able to fix a glorious Christmas dinner for my friends. We had a very nice day, and I told my friends of your wonderful gift. By the way, there was $4 missing. I think it must have been those thieving idiots at the post office. Sincerely, Edna.